The 13th chapter of the book of Revelation. Most of you by now are acquainted with the fact that in the 11th chapter, it's the two witnesses. 12th chapter, the woman on the moon. 13th chapter, the beast. And the 10th chapter, the angel and the thunders. All right? I want to read just a little bit. I might not do anything but exhort you. I might get into some revelation. I've got some revelation on my heart that I'd like to bring out tonight. It might be that the Lord will allow us to. Maybe we can get into some thoughts. And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his head the name of blasphemy. The beast which I saw was likened to a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. The dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. And they worshipped the dragon which gave power unto the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, Who is likened to the beast who is able to make war with him? There was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and powers was given unto him to continue 42 months, and he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle, and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations, and all that dwelt upon the earth shall worship him whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If any man have an ear, let him hear. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had 2 horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon, and he exercised all the power of the first beast before him, and causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. And he doeth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak, and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their forehead, and that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and its number is 666. Now, if you'll give me a little time to talk with you, we might be able to bring out something tonight. We're starting with the teaching a little bit early. It might be that you'll be willing to listen. The Lord should get us into something. But I'd like for you to first notice here that the first thing that is referred to in Revelation 13 is that John is standing upon the sand of the sea in the vision. Now, no doubt this would probably be the Mediterranean Sea. In the Bible, the sea that's referred to as the Great Sea, as far as we can learn, is the Mediterranean Sea. And of course, that's the sea that's over in the eras of the Holy Land. And here, John is standing upon the sands of the sea, and it apparently would be the Great Sea. And as he stands there, he sees an unsightly looking creature coming up out of the waters. The Bible said that as he come up out of the waters and John beheld him, he had a body like a leopard, and said that his feet were as that of a bear, and his mouth was as that of a lion. And he had 7 heads and he had 10 horns. And the dragon gave him his power, gave him his seat. That is a king, a throne, or whatever place of power or authority that he would rate according to the beast intelligence. He received a place of authority. And it said that one of his heads were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And apparently God suffered the wound to be healed so that all of the world might wonder after the beast. Now if you'll read on a little further in the book of Revelation, over where John speaks of the great whore that sat upon many waters, you'll find out that it's over in that area that the Bible speaks of all of the people's names being written down in the Lamb's Book of Life before the world ever was. Before the world ever was, if you are to ever be a child of God, before the world ever started, God wrote your name down in the Lamb's Book of Life. Now, here it says that all will wonder after the beast whose names were not written in the Book of Life from the foundation of the world. There, in the way that it is expressed, you could dispute what John is speaking of. We could say that from the foundation of the world, everyone that ever repented of their sins from the foundation of the world, as they repented, God wrote their name down in the Lamb's Book of Life from this reading. But it's obvious from the other reading that John brought out that the names were written down in the Lamb's Book of Life before the world ever begun. So then, if you are ever to be in God's plan, your name is already written down in the Lamb's Book of Life. But when this beast come up out of the water, John said that everyone that did not have his name written down in the Lamb's Book of Life before the world ever was, he said that everyone that did not have their name in this Lamb's Book of Life would wonder after this beast. Now, he must really be something to cause the entire world to wonder after him. Now, tonight, I don't know just how much that we'll discuss the beast and what he is, but I'd like to try tonight to bring out a few thoughts concerning the beast and what he is, if the Lord will let us. But I'll have to go in a roundabout way to get up to that. One night I started to do that, and we had to take a certain path to be able to build up to it. In the time that I got over to it, you were already restless and ready to go, and I never got to get into it. And perhaps it'll be the same way tonight. But if you should listen, then there's a good possibility that maybe we'll discuss some things that might prove to be enlightening or encouraging to you. It is a true fact that there is going to be a supreme power that is coming up in a beast intelligence. The first thing that we'd like to, for you to notice is that it will be a beast intelligence that heads the thing up. And of course, you know that when you talk about the beast, the first place you go is back to the garden. For the head of the beast was apparently in the garden, and the head of the beast being in the garden, the intelligence of that beast began in the garden. That's the beginning of it. Now, notice that in speaking of the beast coming up out of the waters, having seven heads and 10 horns, one of the heads being wounded to death, John tells us that God used this apparently to let the world see some divine miracle that they might wonder after the beast. A lot of people follow after miracles. A lot of people don't believe that Satan can work miracles. But Satan can work miracles just like God can work miracles. The only thing is that they are lying signs and wonders. And of course, I'd have to be in the right attitude, the right spirit, and you'd have to be in the right spirit for me to be able to go into it to show you what I mean. But the devil certainly has power. A lot of people wonder how that the devil has his power. But the way that Satan gets his power is the very same way that the sons of God get their power. Now, if you'll listen just a minute, I believe I can prove that. Satan is a powerful being, a fallen angel, a great angel, not just another angel, But he was of great power and great authority in the garden. And he has great power, great significance, great leadership ability, great ability. And he has such great outstanding ability that he has been able, by his personality, by his abilities and powers, to set up an entire kingdom throughout the world and cause it to function after his own desire and his own way and his own will. And today what you see that is functioning out yonder in the world in the way of colleges, in the way of businessmen, and in the way of the great system of the world, every bit of it is satanic. Every bit of it belongs to Satan. Every bit of it is his kingdom, is his regime, his power, and his authority. Every bit of it. Everything concerning the law that functions in the world, it's satanic. It's Satan's kingdom. He's the prince of this world. All of the world and everything in it is of the lust of the flesh and the pride of life, and it'll pass away. Everything in it, the entire system, is Antichrist. The head of the kingdom is Satan, the prince of the powers of the air. The Lord is the prince of peace, but Satan is referred to as the prince of this world. When Jesus said, "The prince of this world cometh, he hath nothing in me." But Jesus is not referred to as the prince of the world. He is referred to as the prince of peace, saying that my kingdom is not of the world. Else my servants would fight. But if Christ's kingdom is not of the world, then whose kingdom is this in the world? If it's not the kingdom of Christ, then it's got to be the kingdom of somebody, because it's very evident that there is a kingdom in this world. Because Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world." So then the kingdoms of this world belong to Satan. And the kingdoms of this world are predestined to fall by the power of God. And they're destined to fall at the hands of the sons of God. The sons of God are the one that's going to bring about the fall of the great Babylonian system that's in the world. What a beautiful calling. What a beautiful day. What a beautiful thing. To know, as John said, "Now, beloved, you are the sons of God. It doth not yet appear what ye shall be like, but we know that when he appears, we shall be like him." Why should anybody want to trade sonship with God for the beggarly elements of this world? Paul rebuked some of them after having tutored them. He turned to them and said, "Do you desire again to be under the beggarly elements of the world, or to be in bondage again to the things of this world?" He said, "You observe days and times and seasons, all of these ritualistics." He said, "I'm afraid of you. I'm afraid of you." But he said, "Why be again in bondage to the things of the world? Why? We are creatures of faith. We are creatures of eternity. We don't have to be under bondage to elements and to men, to systems and to practices and paganistic things that they have to observe, because we are children of faith. We are people that own the entire world and all therein. Everything belongs to us. The earth belongs to us. The lakes, the seas, the stars, the moon, the gold, the silver. Everything belongs to us, because we are the supreme rulers of the earth. We are the sons of God. We are the government of God in the earth." You ever thought the reason why? When you speak of the Jews, think of it like this. They had no name to observe. You ever wondered why, or thought of why they had no name to observe? That God never gave them a name to observe? They had no image to observe. God never allowed them to have an image. Never allowed them to have a name. I was talking to our Jewish brother the other day, and it kind of shocked him as we went into conversation. I kept asking him, I said, "How about you telling me the name of the Lord? I said, tell me the name of the Lord in the Hebrew." And he stumbled and he staggered. And he tried every way he could. And finally he just admitted he didn't know. He didn't know. He mentioned one name and then he had to back up and he said, "No, that come from the Greek." I said, "No," I said, "because there never was a name given to the Jews." I said, "There never was an image given to the Jews." I said, because God had never personified himself at that time. God had never taken on a personification. That's what caused the Jews to fall into the darkness. That's why God cut them off at Calvary. That's how that they could be preserved in ignorance. Isn't it wonderful how God cut the Gentiles off in ignorance long enough to take the Jews back there in that day, make them a great nation to use them for types and shadows, and then bring them all the way up to Calvary and cut them off in ignorance and bring the Gentiles back in, so that in this day could save the Gentiles, not giving the Jews any image to worship, though he appeared to them in the fire, appeared to them in the mountain, in the trees, in every other way, but he never gave them a name to worship. He never gave them a personification as an image. Never. That's why Jesus said, you've never seen his image at any time. Never. Somebody would say, well, when he resurrected from the dead, they saw him. But they did not see him. They did not see him. Even the name that he received. The Lord said, I'll give you a new name. When he was here in this world, he was Jesus. But when he was resurrected from the dead, he got a new name. Because he was a new man. As a natural man, I have one name. As a resurrected son of God, I have another name. When Jesus came from the grave, he was a new man. He had a new name. Is that right? So then, they did not know his name, because the Bible said that I will give you a new name. And only those to whom you will reveal it shall know the name. So then the name is not to be made abroad like the name Jesus was, but it's to be a name that is to come by revelation to only those that Christ will reveal it to. It will be the name of Christ. What a beautiful thought. But the Jews never had this. The Jews never knew this. God had never given a personification. But it is a true fact that though they did not know it, yet Jesus being cut off at Calvary was the head of the woman. And Israel was that nation and that whorish woman that God spoke of. And the head of that whorish woman, which was symbolic of Eve, had to be cut off at Calvary. Not that the man was in the transgression, but the woman being in the transgression. And Jesus being the God of the Jews, being the head of it, as the first man to Adam, he had to come back down again at the end of the trail. The beginning of Adam, the end of Adam, the second man Adam. So then he had to come back at Calvary. Here he was as the head of the woman. But according to the Bible, the old system of the guillotine, severing the head from the body, it was obvious that here the head was cut off from the Jews because they rejected Jesus. Jesus being the king of the Jews, or the head of the Jews, the head being cut off, then the bodily part, which was the woman, went away into corruption, died out of the presence of God. The woman cannot know where she's going without her head. She cannot be received of God without her head. There's no way. And when they lost the head, then it was gone. As John the Baptist was beheaded, being a symbol of the end of the law and the prophets, so then the head, which was Jesus, went away into the palace of heaven, just like John's head went over here to the damsel that had danced and went into the palace over there, while as the body went away into corruption, down into the deep sleep of the earth. So then we see that the head doesn't return until Revelation 19. In the book of Revelation, Revelation 19, we see the head coming back, and we see, in a spiritual sense, a spiritual head returning and a spiritual membership following him on white horses. Then he returns in his natural sense, to pick up the natural members of the body, each spiritual part being relative to a natural part. The spiritual Christ and the spiritual members coming back has a natural Jesus and a natural Jewish nation coming back to find their body, typically speaking. So then, it is a beautiful thing to see that God, in cutting the woman off because she lost her head, that he restores the woman's virtues, takes her out of her whoredom, causes her to pass under the rod. God said to Israel, I'll cause you to pass under the rod, which is the days of tribulation. Causes her to pass under the rod of correction by her husband. And then at the end of the tribulation period, the head returns back to the wife, the woman. And then when the woman is picked up, her head receives her and her virtues is restored. Her life comes back to her. Her covering comes over her. And then she enters into the great millennium, which is God's reward to her. Whereas he told Israel, though I have played the harlot unto every green tree, I'll receive you if you come back and repent, he said. So then, Israel being typical of the harlot Eve, in that Eve was a good woman, but was made a harlot in rejecting her head. So then Israel was a good people, but played the harlot against God. And so then passing through the fire, bringing her back into her rightful state of life, then at the end of the way she is received. But during that time there is a virgin, which is the Christ church, and the body of the Lord, the Son of God's wife, which really is the one that is referred to as the bride. So then, when Israel goes into the travail of the tribulation, then the man-child goes up, which is the sonship of God. That is to say, we are at the time of their travail elevated into a great mind, a great dimension out of this world, going into a God realm and into a God mind, for the simple reason that we are to cast Satan out of the spirit. Ours is a spiritual thing. I made the statement the other night that we are passing into the promised land. There's 32,000 promises in this Bible, and it's a word of spirit. And if we ever get into that promised world or promised land or land of promises, we are transformated into it by divine transformation. We pass into this promised land or this promised world by divine transformation, or God translates us right into his own very word of spirit and life, into the membership of the Son, which was the Word made flesh. It is a promised land. It is referred to in the Old Testament as the land of Canaan. But God said promised land because he gave Abraham a promise that his natural seed would inherit Canaan. But he also gave him a promise that Jesus, the promised seed, that through him there would be a spiritual Jew that would inherit an invisible spiritual world of spiritual promises. That we would emerge into it by divine translation, change from glory to glory, from into the world of light, going from one step of God's righteousness to another step of God's righteousness, where Paul used the term herein is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith. So then we preach the gospel. From every part of the gospel comes forth faith. Now the Bible said he sends his word and heals them. I preach the word of God to you. The word comes and heals you. The reason the word comes and heals you is because I give you a promise of healing. You mix your faith with the promise, and thus the promise becomes healing and life. It becomes spirit and power. The gospel is the power of God unto salvation. It is the same way that if we believe, as Enoch did, we enter into a place with God to where the word is again to this generation made spirit and made life, and by divine revelation we receive it, and by divine transformation we translate ourselves right into the great realm of God. This, of course, is referred to as a new birth, a world of promises, 32,000 promises, a land of promises, a great spiritual dimension that exists only in the faith of them that understand spiritual things. In heaven, they're all as angels. So then, if there is an angel present, you cannot see him with your natural eyes unless he manifests himself in a tangible manner. But the angel is still present. But through spiritual eyes, you can see angels. Through the eyes of the Word, you can see angels. A lot of times I look at you and I see fallen angels, which is demon spirits, through the eyes of my understanding by the Word. And then sometimes I see holy angels by the eyes of my understanding through the Word. I see God. The Bible said no man can see God and live. That is to say, I cannot be a natural man. I cannot walk in a natural way and see God. But if I am to see God, I must count myself to be dead by the body of Jesus Christ at Calvary, buried in water baptism, and then resurrected into another world. Then by faith I see God. I comprehend God through the eyes of my understanding. These eyes are for this world. But I have spiritual eyes, whereas Jesus said, you have eyes and see not. He had eyes and could see. You have ears and hear not. But he had ears to hear what the Spirit said to the church. So then the Spirit speaketh unto us, and we hear it. We know his voice. So then the Spirit standeth before us, and we see it. By eyes of understanding, we are made to see the things of God. Therefore, Jesus said, I do always the things that I see the Father do. This is what Paul was trying to say when he said, I speak unto you as spirituals. He said, but you can't receive it. Therefore, he said, I have to deal with you as people in the flesh, which he referred to as babes in Christ, under tutors till the time appointed to the Father, which time is the redemption of the body. Let's look at this for just a few minutes. What do we mean when we say the redemption of the body? To wit, or to acknowledge, or to come to the understanding of, that the body has also been purchased at Calvary. It is referred to as what we call the purchase possession. Is that right? We refer to it as the purchase possession. So then, we are waiting for the redemption of the body, which answers to the old Jewish customs where they used the system of adoption. I say to you again, that though they were already sons, we are already sons. Yet, though we are sons, we are under tutors until the day of the adoption, which is the appointed time of the Father. Is that right? I am under tutors until the time of the appointment of the Father. That is to say, a son differed nothing from the servants. He stayed in the house. He did not differ anything from the servants until the day of the adoption come. But on the day of the adoption, the Jews would take him out, standing before the elders, and say, hear ye, this is now my son. Now, that is to say, he is in lordship. You servants will have to obey him. Whatever I've got, he has a right to use it. As a matter of fact, it was so strong that the prodigal, when he came to the day of adoption, he took his own inheritance and left. He said, give me that that falls to me. At the day of adoption, they had a special inheritance. The father had to give to them part of the inheritance of whatever he possessed at that certain time. So it was a great day. The son automatically took on his lordship. Now, I think that's beautiful, don't you? So then, here's the beauty of it. The Jews being rejected, they not come to sonship, but they being as a servant. The woman not come to the image yet. I made the statement the other day, God keeps the woman, her body, in an unredeemed state. The body is unredeemed. That is, the flesh is the woman. It's the carrier of the inner child, which is Christ within us. It is the woman. It's referred to as the church. The body is referred to as the church. And so then, it is the woman. But the body is unredeemed. For the purpose of causing the woman to remain in shamefaced before her husband. The woman is commanded to be shamefaced. I don't have a woman in here that's shamefaced. I ain't got one that practices the word in here that way. But she's supposed to be shamefaced. Shamefaced. That is, she's supposed to be covered with a veil. And before Rebekah could come in the presence of Isaac, she had to cover herself with a veil. She rode across that desert. When she got there, she saw him. She pulled that veil down. That veil was typical of the law that Moses had on his face over there. That's typical of the flesh. Show them the flesh, the law, the keeping of ordinances, the middle wall of petition. The veil has been rent in twain. But only at the appearing of the head. The Jews is still within the veil.
and the veil isn't moved until Revelation 19 and the coming of the head, or just prior to that, when the head returns back. Then the veil is taken away. Then she sees her husband. Then she's not shamefaced, where she takes on a lordship as one with him. It's the same way with the church. The church is still under the veil of the carnal beast intelligence, seeing through a glass darkly, still under the same thing that overshadowed them at the fall of Adam in the garden, the old Adamic nature, still under that. But we're going to see face to face, going to see eye to eye. Where? In the revelation of Jesus Christ. So then the veil to the church world has not been moved. What is it? God will not move the veil, which is the redemption of the body, so that the woman will continue to be shamefaced in the presence of the Holy Spirit. He wants her to be shamefaced before him because of her sins. Thus being shamefaced, she has to turn and accept his glory, his righteousness, his grace, giving him all praise, giving him all glory, because she knows that she is not right. Only through him. She knows that she, as the Bible uses the term, ye cover with a covering, but not of the Lord. So then the image that you bear is the covering of the beast image, which is the human intelligence that generates a nature. And the nature forms an image, which image God despises. But in the putting away of the old man, it's the circumcision. For in the taking away of the old man, the new man is revealed. Thus it comes into a great headship of God, which is the power of his salvation and the divinity of his leadership. In the taking away of the veil. So then, it is within the church that this is happening. Only in the church can the veil be taken away, or can the divine exposure of the headship of God be seen. Only that. A lot of things that we can't speak of there that I hope you can understand. But anyway, it's the same way with the millennium. The millennium is the restitution, the restoring of all things. What is it? It is God fully restoring before the redemption, which is the chains. So then the millennium is God's great restoration of the garden and all that's been taken away by Satan. I will destroy them that destroy the earth, God said. I will restore, saith the Lord. That is, every species that he ever made, he'll bring back. He'll bring back. Constantly bring back. God will bring them back. Why? He will bring them back so that he can then, on the eighth day, circumcise the world, take away the veil, and glorify it in a celestial glory of his own restored image that he will never be lost again. Satan can never take it away again. So then he must restore what he's doing to us right now. This is Canaan land. We've entered into it. But he's restoring. This is the day of restoration. God's restoring. When he gets it fully restored in the perfect image of the Son of God, then comes Thessalonians change and the body celestial that we're looking for. There are bodies terrestrial, there are bodies celestial. The glory of the terrestrial is one. The glory of the celestial is another. Look at the glory of the woman. What is it? It's her hair. Look at the glory of the old man. What is it? It's his, the grandchildren. Look at the glory of the young man. It's different. It's his strength. One glory different from another glory. Every star different from another glory. So then the glory of one, then the glory of the other. So then, when scientists study the stars, they had to name one of them Mars, that is the galaxies. Had to name one of them Pluto. Why? Because under close observation, they differ in glory. Every one of them has a difference in glory. When you say the glory of God, they have a difference because they represent a different thing in the Spirit. There's the difference. Everything is different in the Spirit. How many understand what I'm saying? So then there is a difference. There is a great world of difference in every individual in this world. There's the difference. There's the difference in the glory of the terrestrial. There's the difference in the glory of the celestial. But the thing is that Satan has gotten up, as we use the terms, into the second heaven. That means that he is standing between the body and the spirit. He is standing between the natural and the angelic. He is standing in the soul realm. In the physical dimension, body, soul, and spirit, he's in the soul realm. In the natural dimension, if we say the natural, and then we speak of the atmosphere above us, and then we speak of the heavens on up where the stars are, then he is the prince of the powers of the air. He's still in between. Is that right? In every realm, he is in between. If you speak of the world of angelic beings, which is the spiritual part of it, you look at that part of it, and you find he's still the middle wall of partition. Because man's angel, and then God's angels. Is that right? In heaven, in the spirit, we are spirits. That is angels. Is that right? So then in the spiritual angelic dimension, there's man's angels, there's heavenly angels, and there's fallen angels. And the fallen angels stand between the heavenly angels and the earthly angels, which is man's angels. The reason for that is because the angels of heaven are supposed to be ministering spirits to us to the heirs of salvation. You understand what I'm saying? This is why Daniel ran into trouble. His spirit kept calling to the heavenly forces, come and help me, come and help me. God dispatched the angel and sent them down there to minister to him, like they did when he came to Jesus. Jesus was weary, and the Bible said after 40 days of fasting, tempted by the devil, then the angels of God came and ministered to him, gave him strength, gave him help, lifted him up. You ever had angels to minister to you? I have. They ministered to me. So herein has seen a great thing. Now, the body being unredeemed causes the woman to remain in shameface. But even though the body is unredeemed, yet it is still in the first heaven. How many know that? See, the body is still in the first heaven. Then the soul is in the second heaven. And the spirit is in the third heaven. Is that right? There's a 30-fold, 60-fold, and 100-fold. Now let's just look at this just a little bit from the understanding of spiritual things. Satan has climbed up into the upper limb. That means he's got in the second heaven. He's got between heaven and earth. Earth is God's first heaven. Now, it was a garden. How many of you deny the fact that the garden was a heaven? When God created, it was his first heaven, his first act. But Satan infiltrated it with all kind of evil. All kind of evil. Thus, he was cursed with briars. See, in the natural, there is briars that are typical of evil spirits, right? Is that right? In the physical, there are afflictions or sicknesses that are typical of the evil spirits. But in the angelic realm, there are demons or fallen angels which are the evil spirits. Is that right? 1, 2, 3, all the way down, it has to follow the same. Now, we use the term a lot of times a water world. Let's just take a few minutes on it so that I can get into some things concerning the beast. We use the term the water world. I brought it out the other night that God made a covenant with Adam. What kind of covenant did God make with Adam in the garden? It was a water covenant. Because water is typical of the body, in that the body is water, mostly water, according to science. So then a water covenant was made with Adam, which brought us into a bodily realm. But that covenant failed. Is that right? It failed in that man rejected it. There was not another covenant made until after the 2,000 years passed over. Then on this side of the flood, there came another covenant, which was the blood covenant, the meat covenant. But notice this. In the first covenant, God made the covenant with Adam, water, the life of all vegetation, eating the fruits. He stayed alive that way. There's a lot we could say about that, but I just want to run it down 1, 2, 3 here. Notice this covenant. That when the covenant was made out of water, the first 2,000 years, the people really knew nothing about rain. Is that right? Because they had a covenant with God. And that covenant was that the earth gave forth the water. It came up out of the earth. They didn't have to worry. The trees was watered. Meaning that God's life was inside of a man. But when they sinned against God, they lost that great covenant. And when they did, the body began to die. Is that right? Just dehydrate and see if you don't die. The body began to die. Until that time, they lived sometimes almost 1,000 years. Before the sin, the fall, they did live longer than that. But when the fall came, they began to die. All right, now, I said that there were giants in those days. The reason for the giants in those days, it was to typify the great long life of mankind. That was a great long life, and it typified that in that day. That's probably why there's probably big giant monsters still in the sea, because when the flood came in, there's a good possibility it's that way because God destroyed every living thing. But when the water came in, that which was in the water, that was still a survival, no doubt, that continued on. Now, why was that? Why? Because God desired to save everything that He could save. Is that right? He had to just take so many of the animals into the ark. Is that right? Because He knew the water would destroy the animals, the water also would destroy all life except the life of vegetation and the life of the fishes. Is that right? No doubt that's why we've got some trees. It's so old like they are. A great, great move of God and the covenant being broken. Thus, when the covenant was broken, the judgment of God was the very penalty of that which they had rejected. Is that right? The thing that was life to them destroyed them. Is that right? All right, then the giants. Giant animals, because they were giant people. Well, you couldn't take a giant and set him down to a little old chicken or a bird. He'd have to have something bigger than that. So then there was giants. Then that first group of people. That was it. The next thing that happened was that God made a meat covenant. That was after the flood. They could eat the animals then. Making the meat covenant, they began to sacrifice unto God. Not as Cain did, which was the fruit of the earth in the first covenant. God received it. But in the second covenant, they began to sacrifice unto God blood. Why? He offered fruit in the first covenant because they had broken. In the second covenant, now they broke it, they had to offer blood. So then here's the blood covenant. They started off, Abraham, offering up a sacrifice. Offering up a sacrifice. That lasted down through that 2,000 years, and the Jews is known to offer blood. Offer blood. And just as the water age ended in a great outpouring of a water witness, the great deluge, so ends the blood age with a human sacrifice called Jesus and the great pouring out of the wrath of God in a typical thing of fire as Nero fiddled Rome burn. So then it was typical as they rejected the blood. Then sprang up another great civilization. This time it was another covenant. God had made the covenant with the body of water, the life of vegetation. He made the covenant with the soul, which was blood of all human anatomy of the beast realm. Then He made the next covenant, which was the spiritual or the angelic covenant that He made with the human spirit. When He made this covenant, it was with the human spirit. It was an angelic covenant. You follow me? One covenant had to do with the natural earth, the baptizing, the washing, the cleansing of the very earth itself, the world of vegetation. It showed that the world of vegetation had become cursed in the sight of God. The next covenant was broken, which was the blood, which showed that all beasts, all humanity, everything that was in the beast realm, and of course human beings was in the beast realm, that every bit of it had rejected God, and the wrath of God was upon it, that the blood of Jesus was resting upon it. The only way that humanity escaped it was the fact that the Jews became the scapegoat and said, "Let his blood be on us." Otherwise, there'd never been a day of grace. The only grace you've got today is that the blood is upon the Jews. That's why they're killed out like they are, slaughtered like they are, because they're the scapegoat. So then the covenant of the blood was broken, the covenant of the soul, with all humanity, all the beast realm. The next thing that God had to do after baptizing the soul, which was his baptism of fire, that he burns all your evil with all the chaff, with the consuming blood. God, who is the consuming fire, burned Jesus in the indignation of his wrath, the soul realm, the beast part, to purge your soul, to take away your sins. By faith you're made heirs. The next thing he had to do, the Son of God had to purge the heavens, because Satan had also been up there. So then he made a covenant with the angelic world. Now we are in the last stages, which is the third covenant. The world's in past through two of them. But now the last stages is this covenant with the Spirit. That's why we speak of the Spirit. That's why we speak of angels. We are equal to the angels. We cannot die. We're in an angelic world. We passed into another dimension. We passed from one heaven to the second heaven to the third heaven. As a matter of fact, that just reminds me of something, Brother C.B. I believe he told me tonight that he saw Brother Godwin in a vision the other night, and Brother Godwin came to him, and he said, "Brother Godwin," said, "you need to be in this." And he said, "Brother C.B., I am in the light," which C.B. didn't deny in the vision. But C.B. said, "Yes," but said, "there's a 30-fold, 60-fold, and 100-fold. And he said, "it's outer court, inner court, which is the holy place, and the holiest of the holiest." And he said, "Brother Godwin, we're in the holiest of the holiest." In the vision, that's third heaven. So then the holiest of holies is where the very life itself is. The blood is the holy place, the body the outer court. But when you get into the very Spirit, you're in the holiest of holies. That's the very fountain of life itself. And so then we've entered into God's Spirit, the very fountain of life itself. Here we are in the third heaven. The way we did that, we broke through the middle wall of partition, which was Satan's barrages, by the door Jesus Christ had went into the kingdom. Through faith, we were baptized into his death and passed through the water, right on through the blood, right on into the Spirit. Is that right? That's why that the child is born of water, blood, and Spirit. When we go down in the watery grave, we come up. Then when we come up from the water, the first covenant to the body, that's a cleansing. We come up by faith in the blood that cleanses the soul. Then we come up by receiving the Holy Ghost, which is the Spirit, in this last dimension to cleanse our spirit. That's why we use the terms in Martin Luther. There we use faith, justification. We use that. And then we use sanctification with Wesley. And then we come on down, and Brother Branham being the milestone of the sage, we use glorification. So there is a glorification to one, there is a justification to one, there is a sanctification to one. So then if by faith we're justified, then our spirit goes in the kingdom. Is that right? But it reverses as it comes down. Of course, that would be a little hard to explain to you. But it reverses as it comes down. I reversed it here one night. I got it on tape somewhere to show you what I mean. But anyway, the justification of faith to the Spirit. Sanctification by fire, that is the blood of Christ, to the soul. How do we know it's the faith of Christ that sanctifies you? That's faith. And how do we know it's the blood of Christ that cleanses, burns the chaff out of your soul? How do we know then that it is the body and the image of the resurrected Christ that is your glorified image in the sight of God?
the wedding garment. Is that right?
So then the last stages of it was the glorification of which we're preaching today. We're in the age of glorification. Now, breaking through the barrage, getting through that, the middle wall of petition, the Kibbutz of ordinance. Therefore, we've come right into the presence of the eternal God. Is that right? How many of you know that symbolically speaking, there's some things that's really taking place right now? Look at the east. All of a sudden, they killed a king over in Arabia. Is that right? Some prince deranged, they said, shot him. I guess it meant in his mind. Maybe his nephew killed him. Isn't that a perfect setting? That if China, at this time when their great multitude of people are seeking to build a road going over into Arabia, that would be perfect. You say, why is that? Because it is Arabia that answers to Mount Sinai. Is that right? Because it's a type, Hagar. And it was in Arabia that Paul received the revelation. And it is in Arabia that the Bible speaks of the Valley of Petra for the escape. So then, if the road is being made, it agrees with Revelation in the last days. The Bible said the way of the kings of the east would be prepared. When Marco Polo, according to history, went over to China and get the spices and into India and different places, he found the route to the east. Therefore, the kings of the east moving in, a way prepared, speaks of the river being dried up to make way for the kings of the east. Why? Because if the king has just been shot over there in that country, it would be just perfect for China to move in. Now let's just look at it and see for a minute. Look at the foreign countries. Over there, considering the first phase of God's work, that is the natural pilgrimage, the educational walk of time. You follow me? From the educational walk of life, that is the natural pilgrimage of exploring, adventure, and finding and discovering, coming from over in the land of Egypt. Civilization springing up in the land of Egypt because God let life fall from the garden down in Egypt. From Egypt, it's the base side of life. It works its way back into the heavens. Is that right? All right, look at it for just a few minutes. Here we see the land of Egypt. See what God's doing in the way of civilization springing up. It springs up there and then it goes around the world. Are you listening? As it springs up, how does it do it? Why does it do it? Because it is typical in the pilgrimage coming this way of the spiritual pilgrimage of God in the end time as it is unveiled from the Western perspective, which is the woman's womb, America, going back. I said that America, here, this would end in a racial conflict of strife and envy and bloodshed to bring forth a spiritual man-child that would rule the world. When the man-child comes forth, you watch what I'm telling you. He will immediately be caught up. Where? Over to Israel. Somebody said, wait a minute, Brother Pike. If he's caught up here from the woman over to Israel, then where does Jesus come through the eastern gate? I don't mean in the land of Palestine. I mean in Arabia. It's just perfect for it right now. If the king is dead and Kissinger's on the scene, they like him and he's part of them, the man-child is born over here in this western part of the world, all of a sudden be caught up to the throne immediately. Why? Because, see, your antitypes is the Arabian world answering to Mount Sinai. That's the bonds child. So then from the bonds child comes civilization, which is the natural pilgrimage of education and intellectual reasoning. Is that right? Coming down through the school books from the tree of knowledge. So then as it comes over to this world, it does exactly, naturally speaking, what we will do, spiritually speaking, as the spiritual Jew moves back in a spiritual pilgrimage over to the Holy Land. The gospel's bringing up in the United States as far as the unveil, that is to say, the coming forth of the child. Then, as it is unveiled, it moves back as a great gospel outreach going back over. The Jews brings it over in a natural veil, which is a religious or educational move. But when we go back, we do it differently. Now, the Jews gave Arabia their education. It was God that put Abraham down there and put this thing in a veil. So it's an educational beast veil from the garden. Is that right? That is to say, if it fell from Jerusalem of Palestine, which was the great garden of God, it fell into Arabia, where Paul went down there. It fell over into Arabia, which is to say, in the bond child in the flesh. Is that right? That's why it's in you today. So then it comes bond child under the beggarly elements of the world, being a servant, the maid was. Not a free child, which was born that Sarah, the free wife. So then, it is obvious that the time runs civilization from Arabia. Is that right? Paul said that Hagar answers to Arabia. Mount Sinai, Hagar, in Arabia. Now, if that's so, then he said heavenly Jerusalem. Now, what would that answer to? In other words, there's got to be a spiritual Jew somewhere. Now, the spiritual unveiling of the fleshly veil and the revelational man-child moving, coinciding with the bonds-child king going back, so moves the king of kings from the unveiling, which is the man-child, moving back across the tribulation period into Jerusalem to set up the millennium. But God will place a difference. Remember, I said there has been a three-year difference, 18 and 21, between male and female as far as marriage. So it takes care of the tribulation period where the Antichrist will reign. For he's not 7 years, he's just in there for that half of the week, the middle of the week, no. So then it takes care of that in that God will let him have his kingdom first. And then after that, Christ will come in with his kingdom. But you can see in this that Jerusalem, in the natural perspective, is considered as the great sunlight. If it is the great sunlight of civilization, as a religious thing, it is too bright for humanity. Is that right? Therefore, it must of necessity be veiled. And the veil is the intellectual reasoning of falling down into what we refer to as the moon realm, which is the church realm. Is that right? That's your second realm, sun realm, moon realm, and stars realm. Like father, mother, and children. So then, as it falls down into the second realm, that is Arabia, that's Egypt, coming from Jerusalem, which is the great sunlight of all the earth, falls down into your moon realm, which is Egypt, or the Arabian perspective of it. From that it becomes the great civilization to the stars, which is the children, the nations scattered across the world, especially America. Now, that is in the natural type, are you listening, with a spiritual perspective. Now, there is another one. What is the other one? The other one is a bodily type. What is it? It is the Japanese, the land of the rising sun, which is your light again in another realm, falling down into your moon realm, which is the Chinese. And from the realms of the Chinese comes all of the goodies, the toys to the children. Is that right? Come on down there, make our toys. How many understand what I'm saying? Mother has a fit over China. So then, there is still an intellectual perspective of it. And the intellectual perspective of it goes to Germany, which is the intelligence that falls down to America through Russia. That is to say, who is competing with America now as far as the race for the moon, the intelligence. So then, it also comes down from them. Our knowledge, our dignitaries, our discoveries of inventions come on down. Is that right? Come right on down through them to the United States. So then, there is a triune perspective of it. How many of you understand what I'm saying? This is a triune perspective. Notice this, the rival of that which opposes Germany. What was it? It was Russia. Where was the war with the Japanese? It was China. What is the war with Israel? It is Arabia. Is that right? And you say, where do you get that? I mean, the woman wars with the man, and the man wars with the woman. So then, that gives you the three males, and that gives you the three females, because the moon rim is female. And the war is that, because the woman has not got life. She's a reflector of the male, which has life. Therefore, she produces the stars, which is the children. Is that right? Now, if there comes forth a child without a name, out of wedlock, it's a bastard child. That's a wandering star without any life of the father. It'll be cast out of heaven. God won't receive it. You follow what I'm saying? Would you give me just a few more minutes? All right, now, looking at a heavenly perspective. See, if Jerusalem is typical of what I'm speaking, if China moves into Arabia, you follow me? Now listen to me now. If China moves into Arabia, cursed is he that goeth down to Egypt for his help. Now, there's two great powers. That's Egypt, the flesh, and Jerusalem, the spirit, intellectual and religious. Is that right? Beast's mind of education, God's mind of the Jewish understanding, which is life, religion. If they go down into that perspective, there are the three parts of the woman coming together. You say, how could that be? Because here is Russia, which is communism, moving into China, red China, picking her up, taking her right over to Arabia, and the body, soul, and spirit of the woman come together in one. Is that right? Because, as I say, that is the religious or the spiritual part with Jerusalem and Arabia. Is that right? It is the soul part if you take with the German and the Russian. That's intellectual. And then it is the bodily part, the natural part, for they are naturally colored yellow as a type of the light, which is Japan and which is China. Now let's look at it like this. If China is a type of the moon, just that perspective right there, the moon is cold on one side, hot on another. Nationalist China, cold. Communist China, red hot. But supposing that the moon ever gets into a position to where it gets hot on both sides at one time, you say, well, it couldn't ever do that. It could do that. Just hit it one wrong side up there, you just hit it one wrong time and take a spin while it's hot over here. On the other side, the sun that close would immediately heat it up. Then what would happen? It'd blow out of its orbit because it takes the cold to hold it into its orbit. You say, are you a science? No. The mind of Christ tells me that. You say, how do you know that? Because look at the human being. What holds the human being in his orbit? It's because it's cold on one side and hot on another side. He's the type of the moon of the church. Inside, he's hot with the fire of God. Is that right? You're hot or cold. On the outside, he's cold with sin, unredeemed. But suppose he gets hot on the outside. He'll go up just like that in a rapture. The gravitation can't hold him anymore. He'll shoot out of his orbit. Go up. It's the same way with the moon. It'll do the same thing. Same way with the stars. As long as them stars are wandering stars, they're stones and they're wandering around up there. If them stars are stones and they reflect that light coming down from the sun, then they reflect that light. If they ever lose contact with that light, then that light that is a magnetic pull holding them up there. If it ever loses that light that's pulling on them through the moon, it'll just drop them. That's the fire and brimstone will come down on your head. Because them things travel down, coming down that form, as they move down through them spears, that friction will heat them things up, turn them, burn them into coals, turn them into stone that's brim. Like I said here, you look at the moon, you see the dark spots, you can see the craters where these different things have come into the moon. You know what I'm speaking of? Fragments flying around out there, going into the moon, leaving craters, hitting. You can see the spots on the moon at night. Is that right? They drop into the earth. Fragments from comets and different things. They drop into the earth. They leave craters in the earth. Those things, when they find them, the fire is burnt out of them. And it just brimmed where it burned the elements in them. But it's really a brimstone. It's without heat because it's done burn itself up. But look what a crater it leaves by the fierce heat. As they drop down, the Bible said a third part of the stars shall fall from heaven. Why is that? Because they're bastard children. They're typical of the angelic forces, which is in the second heaven. The angelic forces is in the second heaven. And when I say natural stars, I'm talking about stones as reflectors. That's out there in the natural realm. You understand what I'm talking about? Water, sea. God created the seas and created the heaven and created the earth. That's natural. Now I'm speaking of a spiritual thing here. Satan in between the fallen angels that are in the presence of God, the second heaven. God won't let them get into the third heaven. He's preserving the holies of holies. But in the second heaven, he lets them come. There, they're in the moon realm, in the star realm. And Satan, like the moon, showed himself in the night as God, when he's only a reflector of the great light, which is God, the light in the daytime. It shines on the stars. Now, on whose stars? It sure don't shine on the true stars. They don't reflect nothing from the devil. Because little stars, as we would say, sons of God, have their own fire, have their own light. They're just like the sun. They're relative to it. But he shines and reflects the light from the sun over to those stars that have no light of their own. It's called wandering stars. They can't hold a position because there's no steady light to them. So then they reflect the light of God through Satan. Satan being able to use faith during the days of grace and controlling his kingdom by faith. It's a shame that he can do more than sons of God, and he does it by faith. The devil believes. How many believe that? He does it by faith. Now then, being angelic beings, they can reflect the personage of the angelic beings. Being up here in heaven, wandering stars, of whom the mist of darkness is reserved forever. That means there's people among us that are bastard children. They're just as religious as anybody else, but they're Cain seed. They don't have a light on the inside. They're not born to the Spirit. They just reflect the light that comes from you and from God through the church. Now, the Bible said Satan has transformed himself into an angel of light. Is that right? So then his ministers have done the same thing. By transformation of the intellectual understanding, get religious and bring out a message. But the true revelation shows that they will fall from heaven. Those in the church will fall in the first heaven. Those that are in the angelic perspective, they will fall. And those that are in the natural heaven will fall. But when them in the natural heaven falls, then them in the physical heaven, which is the church, shall fall. And those which are fallen angels that climb back up into the second heaven through grace, that is, got in the presence of God through grace, living in human bodies, in the spiritual dimension, which is second heaven, they will be cast out. The devil also will personify himself. Grace will be over. You have to understand what I'm saying. All right, now let's look at just a few more minutes, and I'll try to close. Here, as we see this, trying to understand the mind of God and the will of God that we might be children of understanding, God's Word, God's light, Christ is mine, that we be not children of darkness, that is the carnal beast thinking, that the day should take us unaware, but we should know when it's at hand. Seeing that this will actually take place, we see the red communistic dragon in the governmental type that will overthrow the wandering stars. You follow me? Look over in the old country. If these are moons and suns that we spoke of, then that means that scattered abroad are different nationalities, creeds, colors, types that represent both stars and fallen stars, both they with light and they without light. All of its galaxies, all of the other nations. Now this brings us to a thought here about the beast. So then, what brings on the constitution of the beast? There's so many things I'd like to say tonight, but I guess I better just pull in here. In the constitution of the beast. Now, what is the beast? The flesh. Now, not we who are born again, not our flesh, for we are God's flesh. Not that we are redeemed in our body, except by faith in his foreknowledge. He has seen us a finished product. He never sees us in the beast image again. We are God's flesh, bone of his bone and flesh of his flesh. In his mind, therefore, I accept what he sees me to be, denying my mind, which tells me I am beast, right? So then I'm no more beast. By faith, I am that in God, what God sees me. You're no more beast, but you're that which God sees you. Therefore, confessing healing, you become healed. Confessing salvation, you get eternal life. Confessing glorification, you become redeemed. Is that right? All right, now, looking at this, seeing the foreign nations, understanding the moon rim, the sun rim, the galaxy rim, the star rim, it brings us to what the beast is going to be like. What is this constitution of the beast? The constitution of the beast was that he had a body like a leopard. Now, as sure as you live, that's China. That's China. I know there's black leopards, but you follow the pattern of a leopard. That's China. That body of the leopard. Just look at it for a few minutes. Where does the head come from? He said he had a mouth like a lion. Where does that come from? That's going back to Egypt. Why do you say that? Because the intellectual expression of civilization comes from Egypt. That's where the sphinx are. That's where the lions are. That's what they uphold. See, in other words, it is a type of Jerusalem, and Jerusalem is known as the line of the tribe of Judah as far as the type. So the inner type would have to be Arabia. That is the spiritual part. You say, how do you get that to be the spiritual part? Because that's a land of magic. And magic is a type of spirit. So Jerusalem is spirit, Arabia is magic. Is that right? Every one of them the same way. You follow them through, they follow exactly the same thing. So then, here is the mouth of a lion coming from the Arabian part. What would that be? That would be the head of the system. Why would you say that would be the head? Because the type shows it. How could it ever come to the head? It's because right now God's let them get all the oil. Having all the oil, it makes them ahead of the nations. Now, the Bible said there would be 10 horns that would give the power to it, which was 10 kingdoms. I believe that the 10 confederated kingdoms, which has to do with the common mark of Europe, will hate the headship, just like they did Egypt before, but will be forced to come under it because of the oil situation. I believe that China is cutting the road now for the purpose of getting to there. And communist Russia, China, Arabia working together, it'll be a perfect setup for them to do what they want to do. All right, let's look at it. If the head part has to do with Egypt, and the bodily part, which is so many multiplied people, China, if that would be the bodily part, then the feet part of it was as a bear, which could to me only be Russia, which is the communistic power that's carrying China, the body, and causing Arabia to rise up against Jerusalem right now. That in a great constitution would be the red dragon. China coming in, the dragon nation, communist, laying right there at Jerusalem in war against her, waiting to devour the man-child just as quick as it's born. What is it? That means if the kingship of Arabia comes, then that kingship, which is Antichrist, will automatically hate the thoughts of that which is coming, Jesus, over in Jerusalem. Is that right? Will hate it. Tidings out of the east shall trouble him. The constitution of the confederation, notice it, of the 10 nations coming together to the great leader, which would be the Arabian Antichrist, the land of magic, miracles, lying, signs, and wonders. If that be true, then the 10 nations would be Daniel's 10 toes that would come to the image at the end time. And when the 10 nations are set up, then comes the Christ, the Jesus, the revelation, the stone hewn out of the mountain, because it hit the great image in its feet, in its toes. The 10 nations, the 10 toes, a stone which was the millennium kingdom cut out in that day, coming down, smiting the image in the feet, in the toes, which is the end of the image, to bring in the kingdom that shall rule forever and ever, which is the millennium coming in. It is a true fact that the nations, I believe, will hate the headship, and they will burn it with fire. Now, the religious perspective of what you're seeing goes back to Jerusalem, Rome, and America. The reason for that is America is like a tie between Mexico and Canada over here, North America and South America. Over there, Rome is a tie between the two parts. Over a little further, Jerusalem is the tie between the two parts. Therefore, going right down the middle of the trail, you have it running through civilization all the way over here. Now, if that is true, then this confederation of churches, speaking spiritually now, religiously. How do you understand what I say when I speak religiously? If I say, listen real close, and I'm going to try to close. If I say Palestine, I'm saying Jew. Is that right? Israel. All right, let's run it down. Palestine, Italy, America. Is that right? That's my countries. All right, by religion, Jew, Catholic, Protestant. Is that right? By the dominating cities, the predominant cities, Jerusalem, Rome, and then Washington. Is that right? Which is swinging fast to Atlanta, Georgia. I understand Atlanta's becoming known as the international city. How do you understand what I'm saying? All right, now, just for a minute or two more, and then I'm going to try to close. If this is true, then the great constitutional power of Antichrist will be Egypt with the oil. Are you listening? That is the money power, the source. China with a multitude of physical strength, more people, about a third of the population of the world. Is that right? And then Russia with the systematic order, the communistic policy. All of it put together constitutes a great kingdom. A great power that can overthrow the world. There ain't nothing can stop it. The Bible said who could make war with the beast? Now let's look at it just for a minute. The Bible said that he not only had 10 horns, which appears to be the confederated nations, But, you know, he received crowns on them, which was kingdoms. But it said that he had seven heads. Now, the beast, to me, in what I understand, the beast is the human body that constitutes a great kingdom under a headship that's satanically controlled. A personage of Satan, a personification, when he's kicked out of heaven. That is when the sons of God get him out of the spirit. He'll have to go down there and set up his kingdom for that short period of time. He knows he had but a short time during that tribulation period. Goes about like a roaring lion, killing all he can. Got about 3 years. Right now, if he's got seven heads, remember when John spoke of the beast, it was in 96 A.D. That means it was way back at the beginning of it. He spoke of them as some having been fallen. Five is fallen, one is, and one is to come. Is that right? That was seven. And then the eighth will come and be of the seven. Is that right? Now, when you look at it going back through the Old Testament, you can pick up the different powers of regime that were strengthened back there and bring it right on up and show exactly what John was speaking of. Now, wouldn't be any trouble. But remember when this beast come, it was in our day that he had all them heads. Even though John said they were fallen back there, yet it's evident that when he comes on the scene, he's carrying all of the powers. I believe that we can get a typical picture of them. Though they go back in ancient history, and you have to run them back in ancient history to pick up what powers they were, yet it is obviously seen in our day as strength or kingdoms. Is that right? Now, if we just said, when we had the move of Nazism, Judaism, all these was kingdoms, great, powerful kingdoms. Is that right? Of Nazism, Judaism, capitalism, Catholicism, communism, all of these powers, one to one, as you figure them up, comes to seven powers. And then it said that there came an eighth, which the eighth has not come because it's the Antichrist system. It is the last kingdom. But in the coming of the last system, it will be set up as a dominating power to rule the world. Is that right? That power will be the eighth power or the great kingdom, and the beast that comes will be the same devilish spirit that worked in Hitler with Nazism, that worked in Rome when they were predominant in Catholicism, that's worked through America in the capitalism, that has worked in the Babylonian system way down there in Babylon when it dominated the world, and worked in the Egyptian power when Egypt was ruling the world when they had to turn Moses and him loose. Every one of these powers, including the last of the seven, which was communism, working in it, all of these powers are summed up in one, which is the Antichrist system, which will be the eighth and will have every bit of this evil poured within he and him as one great move of his evil power that he's brought in part before. All of these are seen in the prehistoric move of God way back yonder, even before history ever came in. Each step of it, you'll find it. Even going back as far as Nimrod's rule. For in that day, five had fallen. One was in power. One was yet to come. And the eighth was to be of the seven. That indicates that in the days of John, by 96 A.D., as far as that which was to type the thing out had already gone by. But in that day, if there was one ruling, it had to be Rome, because Rome was in power. Then he said there was another that was to come. If five was fallen, Rome was in power, that was one of them. That would have been six. And then if another was come, it had to be capitalism, which would be seven. That wouldn't leave but one more, be the eighth, which would have to be the Antichrist coming in the tribulation. So it's obvious that these great powers that was to come, being kingdoms, was to set in on the world and to bring about the consummation of the world. Now, I'm going to say this in close. If it is true that the communistic dragon is laying in around Jerusalem, moving in through the bonds child, that is the flesh, to consume the Antichrist spirit, it's moving in. And at this time, you know that the church world is trying to stamp out the little group of real God-called people. All of the religions confederating to come against the true religion of God, to stamp it out, that the Christ, the revelation, might step in at that time and to take over and smite all the religions and tear them down and take over. Same way with Jerusalem or the confederation nation. All of them coming in at that time to take over that little nation, there where Jesus will come in there. If that is true, if we are that close at hand, and if the fire and brimstone is to come down and America is the type of one of those dimensions, whereas Revelation said a third part of the moon, a third part of the sun, a third part of the stars, a third part of the trees, a third part of the waters, going back to people in tides and shadows, if we could bring it all out. How do you know? We just say this right quickly. A third part of the sun. How do you know that means Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, that Jesus, one third of the sun was smitten, the Godhead. Go back to a third part of the trees, right on down to a third part of the waters. Follow humanity's types of trees and water and everything. Come right on down. Now, if we had a time to go into it, I could show you what I meant by it. But if we say Jerusalem, Rome, and America, a third part, Jew, Catholic, Protestant, if they hit a third part, all they'd have to do is hit the Protestant part. Blow it up. Just like Brother Branham saw the bombs falling, the fire and brimstone. You say, where do you get that? Peter said, the elements being on fire shall melt with fervent heat. And the bombs are made out of the atoms, which is the elements. Dropping those bombs over here, burning it up, blowing it to pieces, to bring in the move of the third part. Not to destroy the earth. Somebody said, well, what about destroying the earth? You don't record where to destroy the earth. It will drive civilization back from here over there. When God switches the government from here over there, catching up with the false man child, getting it seated, then when the government gets started, he'll blow the side up. That'll be the end of it. So because Jesus is coming in over there to set up the millennium, then in the millennium they can restore all this. They'll build, plant, and do all them things. Bring back the restoration. How do you understand what I'm saying? This nation with all nations will have to go to Jerusalem to pay tribute or send honor by their king to that city when Jesus rules. Let's everybody stand together. A lot of things I'd like to say. And I hope that some of the things that I've said tonight will line up in your thoughts and understanding. The heavens declare his handiwork, and he's not left us without witness. Never before, never in any time in the history of the world has God ever left the people without a witness of God. Never. Never before. We're not children of darkness, but of light, that day should not take us unawares. You love the Lord? Let's sing a little chorus together. I like the song we sang, Eddie, I'll Give the Glory to Jesus. Let's sing. And we'll give all the glory to Jesus. We'll sing about his love. We'll sing of his love. And we'll give all the glory to Jesus.